Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Revived Thoughts is a production of Revive Studios.
This is Joel, and you're listening to Revive Thoughts.
If I throw out one text, I must throw out all, for in the same Bible I read of rewards and punishments, heaven and hell.
Every episode, we bring you a different voice from history in a sermon that they delivered. Today's address comes to us from D.L. Moody. It was preached in 1794 in Philadelphia. As I'm sure you've noticed by now, Troy is out this week. He is on a much well-deserved vacation with his family. So it's a Joel solo episode today. And I want to do something a little bit different. I want to have fun with it. No one's here to tell me I can't. So we're going to have a little bit of a different format. I like D.L. Moody a lot. If you've listened to our previous D.L. Moody episodes, you know that I often... Those are some of my favorite episodes. I enjoy them. And we've done several D.L. Moody episodes already in the library that you can go check out. And my favorite thing about all these stories, especially out of this generation, out of this era, are all of these vignettes, these little peeks into daily interactions they had that give you such a glimpse into their character and what life for them must have been like and what interactions with the people around them was like. Those little anecdotal pictures of who so-and-so must have been, D.L. Moody in this case. And so I just want to take today and just kind of ramble about these various interactions that D.L. Moody had and kind of marvel like, wow, what kind of a guy would say that? Or, you know, what kind of a guy would do that? That's different than how we think about things today. And we have several of these looks into his life from his dear friend and one that would kind of take up the torch after Moody passed away, R.A. Torrey. R.A. Torrey, who's another individual that we've done some episodes on, he worked very close with D.L. Moody, and so he's written a lot about his life and these observations he had of him. And so we have those today to kind of look back and hear these accounts that they would have talked about. Moody, of course, in the Chicago area of the United States in the mid-1800s, and his ministry would lead him to have worldwide impacts on everything from education to church structures and functionality. But an interesting character to interact with. There's this account, again, that we get from R.A. Torrey that's recalling this experience that he had with Moody telling him this story, right? And he's talking about that there was this occasion in Chicago where Moody was walking along the street, and that's how a lot of these stories start, because he spent a lot of time out in the street, and he saw a little girl standing on the street with a pail in her hand. And he went up to her, invited her to their Sunday school, telling her, you know, how pleasant of a place it would be, how much she would like to come and visit. And she promised that she would go the following Sunday. But Sunday came around and she was nowhere to be found, and Moody watched for her, you know, in the following weeks, and she never showed up again, you know, and never came to that Sunday school. And several weeks later, Moody was out in the streets once again and he saw that same girl from a distance, and so he started walking towards her just to chat, and she spotted him from a distance and took off running, and Moody followed her through what sounds like a chase scene from a movie, down various streets, down alleyways, up and down corridors. Moody was following this girl. I'm not sure what was going through Moody's mind. I'm sure it was nothing nefarious, but he really wanted to talk to this girl. Eventually, the girl ran and dashed into a salon, and Moody dashed in after her. She ran out the back door and up a flight of stairs that went along the back of the salon there. Moody followed her. He followed her up to the room, the little apartment that was above the salon there, into a bedroom where this girl jumped under a bed to hide from Mr. Moody. Now, I wasn't there. This sounds a little creepy to me. Again, I don't know what the situation was, what the vibe in the room was. It's hard not to hear that interaction and think to yourself, maybe don't do that, Moody. Maybe don't do that. And there Moody was able to look down, see this girl hiding under the bed, and ask her what she was doing. And it was there in that little apartment above the salon that he was able to meet the mother, who was a widow. And she had seen better circumstances. She was once pretty well off, but now they were really struggling, living in a ramshackle apartment above a saloon, and she had several children. And one by one, the entire family, Moody was able to share the gospel with them and lead the whole family to the Lord. And this family would go on to become a very prominent family in Moody's church. Several of these family members became very prominent people within Moody's church themselves. Some moved away and became prominent people in other churches. And this particular child that was hiding under the bed would eventually marry one of the higher officers in Moody's church itself. And it's one of those circumstances where this very odd interaction of Moody chasing down this girl in the streets, it's one of those things where we can see and measure the impact that his compassion on this family and his patience with this family led, because so many of these family members left so great of impacts wherever they went. And that's just one family. Another account that Moody recalled, it was late one night. He got home exhausted, right? He's had a long day's work. He crawls into bed, and it dawns on him that he had not spoken to a single soul about Christ that day, and that was a big deal for him. And it was a wrestle with, you know, he recalls wrestling in bed whether he was going to get up. You know, it wouldn't do any good. Nobody's on the street at this hour. It's the middle of the night. But he got up, and he got dressed, and he went to the front door, and he opened the front door, and it's pouring rain, and oh boy, no one's definitely going to be out in this pouring rain. And as he's thinking these thoughts, he hears the pitter-patter of a man's footsteps running by, coming down the street, holding an umbrella over his head. And Mr. Moody darts out, and he rushes up to the man, and says, "May I share the shelter of your umbrella with you?" And the man replies, "Certainly." And they begin talking about the rain, they begin talking about the shelter, you know, sheltering from the storm. And Mr. Moody preached the gospel to him then and there. God just brought this random person along at the exact time that Moody happened to open his front door and look outside and meet that desire of his to be able to talk about Christ with at least someone every day. There's this, I think, pretty incredible account that goes to show you the humility of Moody and maybe a little bit of like obliviousness in a good way, you know, to how beloved he was. Their church was established there in Chicago, and this year the World's Fair was coming to their city, to Chicago. 500,000 people around the world. I mean, it's huge. And they're having, you know, the same conversations a lot of churches do during, you know, big events like this. What do we close? And, you know, everyone's going to be at the fair anyway. Do we try to have services? What do we do with our Sunday here? And Moody said, "Hey, let's have a service. You know, there's probably not going to be much people there." He's working with R.A. Torrey on this. Torrey reluctantly agrees. He pushes back a little bit. You know, again, no one's going to be there, but let's preach a noon hour sermon, and maybe we'll have a service a little bit later as well. That one might be a little bit better attended. So that Sunday, Moody was on his way to church. He actually got caught up. He was running late. He didn't get there until kind of just right up on the noon hour when he was supposed to, you know, he essentially needs to walk right in there up to the stage and start preaching. But he found that he couldn't quite get in the door because it was too jam-packed with people. Thousands of people had shown up, and he physically couldn't get up to the stage. He had to go around the outside of the building and crawl in through a window. And he was surprised that so many people came for this you know, noon hour sermon when they would all be at the fair. And he thought they'd all be there. And then after talking with people, they begin to realize these crowd of people, this group of people, they weren't there for this noon hour message. They didn't know about that one. They were there for the evening message. They were there early. He was so popular. He was so, and people wanted to hear Moody preach so bad that they were there hours and hours and hours early to be there for the evening message, which was more publicitized. It's the World's Fair. So these people are coming from all over the world, and they wanted to hear the world famous D.L. Moody while they were in town. They had no idea. What kind of a character, what kind of a man does it take to have that perspective on life and reality, you know? It's, again, like I said, obliviousness in a good way, if that's a thing. And that's the kind of person it takes, right? It's hard not to get prideful. It's hard not to get, you know, filled with vanity or arrogance.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
We have a few different accounts of this next story, right? It once again starts with Moody coming home late from his place of business, once again very tired, and once again suddenly occurring to him that, didn't talk to anyone about accepting Christ today. He wasn't home yet. He was walking home, right? So he's walking home, and then he sees a man on the street stumbling under a streetlight. A perfect stranger to him. Though it turned out afterwards that this man knew who Moody was. So Moody, you know, steps up to this stranger and he says, "Are you a Christian?" And the man replied, "That's none of your business whether I'm a Christian or not. If you weren't a sort of preacher, I would have knocked you in the gutter." Mr. Moody, you know, he said a few earnest words, but then he got out of there, right? This man is purely confrontational. Although, again, very interesting approach. That's not the type of approach we would see in today's day and age. You wouldn't walk up to a stranger and go, "Are you a Christian?" That's, you know, it was a different society, a different type of people, a different attitude towards evangelism, and in some ways, you know, ways that we have gotten away from. The next day, a man that Moody worked with, a prominent business friend, got a call from this stranger. They were friends, and boy, did he chew Moody out. He said, "That man Moody of yours on the north side, he's doing more harm than good. He's got zeal without knowledge. He stepped up to me last night, being a perfect stranger. He insulted me by asking me if I was a Christian. I told him I'd knock him into the gutter." And this, you know, co-worker of Moody's recounted this to Moody later on. He says, "You know, that gentleman you talked to, Colin, he was very upset. He recited all these. He said he was going to knock him out, and you're doing more harm than good. He's got this zeal without knowledge." And Moody went out of the office, you know, somewhat crestfallen, somewhat not feeling too hot, wondering, being reflective. Was he not doing more good than harm? Does he really have zeal without knowledge? It caused him to, you know, question his approach. Was he really just making people mad without any benefit of it? And weeks pass, and one night, Mr. Moody was in bed, and he heard this pounding on his front door, and he jumped out of bed, rushed to the door. He thought surely his house was, like, on fire or something, because this person was so vigorously trying to get his attention. He opened the door, and there stood this man, the stranger that he spoke to under the streetlight. And this man said to him, "Mr. Moody, I have not had a good night's sleep since that night you spoke to me under the lamppost. And I have come around at this unearthly hour of the night for you to tell me what I have to do to be saved. And Mr. Moody took him and told him what he had to do to be saved. And he accepted Christ then and there. And a couple years later, American Civil War broke out, and this gentleman would actually end up dying in the war. I can't help think that those last few years of salvation, of walking in the Spirit, of security, had to have been the sweetest years for him, better than all the years that came before that. Moody had an unbelievable passion for the gospel. And part of the reason for that is that he took hell very seriously. And Troy and I, you know, we talk about often our modern generation's disassociation with hell being a reality. And we talk about hell, and we're growing up and we were raised, and we hear about hell, and we're mostly not going to deny that hell doesn't exist. But we don't live like it's real. We don't act like it's real. Moody acted like hell was real. He truly believed hell was real. And when we talk about living for eternity, you know, having our mind set on eternal things, yes, we think of that being heaven. And we think about that being the fulfillment of God's grace for us and what he's allowed us to partake in. But another aspect to thinking about eternity is also acknowledging and believing and accepting that hell is eternal as well. Do we act like that? Do we believe really that hell is real? Moody is someone that I feel we can, that the evidence is there in the way he lived his life, in the way he interacted with people. His faith was real to him. His reality was real to him. And it affected every decision he made, every interaction he had. He knew that that eternity of peace with God was so much more sweet, so much more fulfilling, so much more happy than the eternity apart from Christ. So this is a message here where he's gonna talk a little bit about hell.
A man came to me the other day and said, "I like your preaching. You don't preach hell, and I suppose you don't believe in one. Now, I don't want anyone to rise up in the judgment and say that I was not a faithful preacher of the Word of God. It is my duty to preach God's Word just as He gives it to me. I have no right to pick out a text here and there and say, I don't believe that. If I throw out one text, I must throw out all, for in the same Bible I read of rewards and punishments, heaven and hell. No one ever drew such a picture of hell as the Son of God. No one could do it. For he alone knew what the future would be. He didn't keep back his doctrine of retribution, but preached it out plainly, preached it, too, with pure love, just as a mother would warn her son of the end of his course of sin. The Spirit of God tells us that we will carry our memory with us into the other world. There are many things we would like to forget. I have heard Mr. Cuff say that he would give his right hand if he could forget how badly he treated his mother. I believe the worm that never dies is our memory. We say now that we forget, and we think we do, but the time is coming when we will remember and cannot forget. We talk about the recording angel keeping record of our life. God makes us keep our own record. We won't need anyone to condemn us at the bar of God. It will be our own conscience that will come up as a witness against us. God won't condemn us at his bar. We will condemn ourselves. Memory is God's officer, and when he will touch these secret springs and say, Son, daughter, remember, then tramp, tramp, tramp will come before us in a long procession all the sins we have ever committed. I have been twice in the jaws of death. Once I was drowning and was about to sink when I was rescued. In the twinkling of an eye, everything I had said, done, or thought of flashed across my mind. I do not understand how everything in a man's life can be crowded into his recollection in an instant of time, but it all flashed through my mind at once. Another time I was caught in the Clark Street Bridge and thought I was dying. Then memory seemed to bring all my life back to me again. It is just so that all the things we think we have forgotten will come back by and by. It is only a question of time. We will hear the words, Son, remember. And it is a good deal better to remember our sins now and be saved from them than to put off repentance until it is too late to do any good. The scientific men will say that every thought comes back again sooner or later. I heard of a servant girl whose master used to read Hebrew in her hearing, and some time afterward, when she was sick of a fever, she would talk Hebrew by the hour. Do you think Cain has forgotten the face of his murdered brother, whom he killed 6,000 years ago? Do you think Judas has forgotten that kiss with which he betrayed his master? Or the look that master gave him as he said, "Do you betray the Son of Man with a kiss?" Do you think these antediluvians have forgotten the ark and the flood that came and swept them all away? My friends, it is a good thing to be warned in time. Satan told Eve that she would not surely die, and there are many men and women now who think that all souls will at last be saved in spite of all their sins. Do you suppose those antediluvians who perished in Noah's day, those men too vile and sinful for the world, do you think God swept those men right into heaven and left Noah, the only righteous man, to struggle through the waters? Do you think when the judgment came upon Sodom that those wicked men were taken right into the presence of God, and the only righteous man was left behind to suffer? There will be no tender, loving Jesus coming and offering you salvation there, no loving wife or mother to pray for you there. Many in that lost world would give millions of dollars if they had them, if their mothers could have prayed them out of that place, but it will be too late. They have been neglecting salvation until the time has come when God says, "Cut them down, the day of mercy has ended." You laugh at the Bible, but how many there are in that lost world today who would give countless treasures if they had the blessed Bible there? People mock ministers, but bear in mind there will be no preaching of the gospel there. Here they are God's messengers to you, loving friends that look after your soul. You may have some friends praying for your salvation today, but remember, you will not have one in that lost world. There will be no one to come and put his hand on your shoulder and weep over you there and invite you to come to Christ. There are some people who ridicule these revival meetings, but remember, there will be no revivals in hell. There was a man in an insane asylum who used to say to himself in a voice of horror, "If only I had." He had been in charge of a railway drawbridge and had received orders to keep it closed until the passage of a passenger train. But a friend came along with his ship and persuaded him to open the bridge just for him, and while it was open, the train came thundering along and fell into destruction. Many were killed, and the poor bridge tender went mad over the result of his own neglect of duty. "If only I had." A good man was one day passing a saloon as a young man was coming out, and thinking to make fun of him, he called out, "Deacon, how far is it to hell?" The deacon gave no answer, but after riding a few feet, he turned to look at the scoffer and found that his horse had thrown him to the ground and broken his neck. I tell you, my friends, I would sooner give my right hand than to trifle with eternal things. Tonight you may be saved. We are trying to win you to Christ, and if you go down from this building to hell, you will remember the meetings we had here. You will remember how these ministers looked, how the people looked, and how it has sometimes seemed as if we were in the very presence of God himself. In that lost world you won't hear that beautiful hymn, "Jesus of Nazareth passeth by." He will have passed by. There will be no Jesus passing that way. There will be no sweet songs of Zion there. No little children either to pray for their impenitent fathers and mothers. It is now a day of grace and a day of mercy. God is calling the world to himself. He says, "I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked turn from his way and live. Turn you, for why will you die? Oh, if you neglect this salvation, how will you escape? What hope is there? May your memories be wide awake today, and may you remember that Christ stands right here. He is in this assembly offering salvation to every soul. He is not willing that any should perish, but turn to him and live." When I was at the Paris exhibition in 1867, I noticed there was a little oil painting, only about a foot square, and the face was the most hideous I had ever seen. It was said to be about 700 years old. On the paper attached to the painting were the words, "Sowing the tares." The face looked more like a demon's than a man's, and he sowed these tares. Up came serpents and reptiles. They were crawling up on his body. and all around were woods with wolves and animals prowling in them. I have seen that picture many times. Ah, since the reaping time is coming, if you sow to the flesh, you must reap corruption. If you sow to the wind, you must reap the whirlwind. God wants you to come to Him and receive salvation as a gift. You can decide your destiny today if you will. Heaven and hell are set before this audience, and you are called upon to choose. Which will you have? If you will take Christ, He will receive you to His arms, but if you reject Him, He will reject you. Now, my friends, will Christ ever be more willing to save you than He is now? Will He ever have more power than He has now? Why not make up your mind to be saved while mercy is still offered to you? I remember a few years ago, while the Spirit of God was working in my church, I closed the meeting one night by asking any that would like to come to Christ to rise, and to my great joy, a man arose who had been anxious for some time. I went up to him and took him by the hand and shook it, and said, "I am glad to see you get up. You are coming out for the Lord now in earnest, are you not?" "Yes," he said, "I think so. That is, there is only one thing in my way." "What's that?" I asked. "Well," said he, "I lack the courage. I confess to you that if such a man, naming a friend of his, had been here tonight, I should not have risen. He would laugh at me if he knew of this, and I don't believe I have the courage to tell him." "But," I said, "you have got to come out boldly for the Lord if you come out at all." While I talked with him, he was trembling from head to foot, and I believe the Spirit was striving earnestly with him. He came back the next night, and the next, and the next. The Spirit of God strove with him for weeks. It seemed as if he had come to the very threshold of heaven and was almost stepping over into the blessed world. I never could find out any reason for his hesitation, except that he feared his old companions would laugh at him. At last, the Spirit of God seemed to leave him. Conviction was gone. 6 months from that time, I got a message from him that he was sick and he wanted to see me. I went to him in a great hurry. He was very sick and thought he was dying. He asked me if there was any hope. "Yes," I told him, "God has sent Christ to save him," and I prayed with him. Contrary to all expectations, he recovered. One day I went down to see him. It was a bright, beautiful day, and he was sitting out in front of his house. "You are coming out for God now, aren't you? You will be well enough soon to come back to our meetings again." "Mr. Moody," he said, "I have made up my mind to become a Christian. My mind is fully made up to that, but I won't be one just now. I am going to Michigan to buy a farm and settle down, and then I will become a Christian." "But you don't know that you will get well." "Oh," he said, "I will be perfectly well in a few days. I have got a new lease of life." I pleaded with him and tried every way to get him to take his stand. At last he said, "Mr. Moody, I can't be a Christian in Chicago. When I get away from Chicago and get to Michigan, away from my friends and acquaintances who will laugh at me, I will be ready to go to Christ." "If God has not grace enough to save you in Chicago, He has not in Michigan," I answered. At last he got a little irritated and said, "Mr. Moody, I'll take the risk." So I left him. I remember the day of the week, Thursday, about noon, just 1 week from that very day, when I was sent for by his wife to come in a great hurry. I hurried there at once. His poor wife met me at the door, and I asked her what was the matter. "My husband," she said, "has had a relapse. I have just had a council of physicians here, and they have all given him up to die." "Does he want to see me?" I asked. "No." "Then why did you send for me?" "I cannot bear to see him die in this terrible state of mind." "What does he say?" I asked. "He says his damnation is sealed, and he will be in hell in a little while." I went in, and he fixed his eyes upon me. I called him by name, but he was silent. I went around to the foot of the bed and looked in his face and said, "Won't you speak to me?" And at last he fixed that terrible deathly look upon me and said, "Mr. Moody, you need not talk to me any more. It is too late. You can talk to my wife and my children. Pray for them, but my heart is as hard as the iron in that stove there. My damnation is sealed, and I will be in hell a little while." I tried to tell him of Jesus' love and God's forgiveness, but he said, "Mr. Moody, I tell you, there is no hope for me." And as I fell on my knees, he said, "You need not pray for me. My wife will soon be left a widow, and my children will be fatherless. They need your prayers, but you need not pray for me." I tried to pray, but it seemed as if my prayers didn't go higher than my head, and as if heaven above me was like brass. The next day his wife told me he lingered until the sun went down, and from noon until he died, all he was heard to say was, "The harvest is past, the summer has ended, and I am not saved." After lingering along for an hour, he would say again those awful words, and just as he was passing, his wife noticed his lips quiver, and that he was trying to say something, and as she bent over him, she heard him mutter, "The harvest is past, the summer is ended, and I am not saved." He lived a Christless life, he died a Christless death, we wrapped him in a Christless shroud, and bore him away to a Christless grave. Are there some here that were almost persuaded to be Christians? Take my advice and don't let anything keep you away. Fly to the arms of Jesus this hour. You can be saved if you will. If you will, I am moved to read this poem that has touched my heart. I hope it reaches you as it did me. I sat alone with my conscience in a place where time was o'er, and we talked of my former living in the land of evermore, and I felt I should have to answer the question it put to me, and to face the answer and question throughout an eternity. The ghosts of forgotten actions came floating before my sight, and things that I thought had perished were alive with a terrible might, and the vision of life's dark record was an awful thing to face, alone with my conscience sitting in that solemnly silent place. And I thought of a faraway warning of a sorrow that was to be mine, in a land that then was the future, but now is the present time. And I thought of my former thinking of the judgment day to be, but sitting alone with my conscience seemed judgment enough for me. And I wondered if there was a future to this land beyond the grave, but no one gave an answer, and no one came to save. Then I felt that the future was present, and the present would never go by, for it was but the thought of a future become an eternity. Then I woke from my timely dreaming, and the vision passed away, and I knew the faraway warning was a warning of yesterday, and I pray that I may not forget it in this land before the grave, that I may not cry in the future and no one come to save. I have learned a solemn lesson which I thought to have known before, and which, though I learned it dreaming, I hope to forget no more. So I sit alone with my conscience in the place where the years increase, and I try to fathom the future in the land where time will cease. And I know of the future judgment how dreadful it will be, that to sit alone with my conscience will be judgment enough for me.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Revived Thoughts. Today's sermon was narrated by Avery Harrington. Big thanks to Avery for sending this over. If you liked today's episode, please share it with a friend. And I do want to give our Patreons another shout out. Thank you so much, Patreons, for all that you do and the ways that you've contributed to the show and allow it to keep going on. I look forward to having Troy back next week. Until then, though, this is Joel, and this is Revived Thoughts.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.